Welcome to the SI Media Podcast. Jimmy Trainor, your host here for my second week hosting. Jim Miller last week about ESPN and John Skipper, and I really appreciated the feedback I got on that podcast and overall feedback for now hosting this podcast. People are tremendous on Twitter. Very nice words heard from a lot of people. It really means a lot. I appreciate it. I'm here with my producer, Lou Pellegrino. Lou, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. How's your week?
Good so far.
Are you excited for opening day?
You know what? For the first time in a long time, I am. I know the year. I'm a huge Mets fan. I know you're a Yankee guy.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're not a New York sports fan, you may tune this out, but I'm sure you won't. But it's always that hope springs eternal type of feeling where the weather's cold outside here in the Northeast and there's snow sometimes in the forecast for the next couple of days. But as soon as you see the green grass of Citi Field or Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park, or even Dodger Stadium, you know, it's like, okay. Warm weather's coming, and you know you're in this for the long haul. Dig in. It's going to be fun. If you're a Yankee fan, if you're a Red Sox fan, if you're a Mets fan, I feel bad for you Florida Marlins or Miami Marlins fans. But
Jeter will turn it around. Jeter will turn it around. Don't worry. And listen, if you're a Mets fan, you should be excited for the season. I mean, I think if those pitchers stay healthy, you'll be right there. I mean, you should be excited about Syndergaard. Harvey looks like he's there a little. You know, he's coming back. I think it could be an exciting season for
the
Mets.
Since this is a sports media type podcast.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We have a round table coming up.
I'm excited for Gary, Keith, and Ron.
Keith is always
Gary Cohen, Keith Hernandez, and Ron Darling, the three-headed monster booth in the Mets broadcast TV booth. They're always fun.
I feel like Keith is the New York version. Keith is a little bit more toned down New York version of Bill Walton. Like, you just tune him in at any time and hear something crazy. And
yes, but in a different sense, where one is the flower child, one
is the very
modern, not very mellow, excuse me, hippie thinking, hippie way of life, and everything's great, and look at the way this, and look at that. And then you have Keith, who's looking at his watch the entire
time.
Wants
to be in the Hamptons, yeah.
Right, where it's the seventh inning, the Mets have, you know, a 7-1 lead, and the pitching coach on the opposing team, he comes out to talk to the pitcher. Then the manager comes out and makes a pitching change. Then there's another pitching change, and Keith's like, it's 7-1. Yeah. Let's go.
Keith is, get me to the Hamptons and let me get on the beach.
Right.
Like I said, this episode will be a roundtable. We have Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. Andrew worked at the Post covering media, left to go to ESPN to cover the Yankees, which he did for a while. And then he went back to the Post recently, just in the last few months, to cover media again. And Andrew's been absolutely killing it since he returned to the Post cover media, breaking story after story. You'll hear Andrew broke two stories this week alone on Tuesday with Peyton Manning not going to Fox to do the Thursday night game and Dan Patrick leaving Sunday night football in the studio. And Chad Finn of the Boston Globe covers media for them. He's on the roundtable. It's Chad, Andrew, and myself, and we went through a slew of topics, everything from the Thursday night game to Sister Jean and the NCAA tournament coverage and the crying kids and A-Rod in the booth, Mike and the Mad Dog for my New York Mike and the Mad Dog fans out there, SportsCenter 6. We went through everything, and those guys were great. So we're going to get you to that roundtable. And then next week, I hate plugging guests. I think it's very dicey, but I'm just going to say we will have a media guest for you next week. But we're going to have two guests next week. We'll have a media guest. I'm not going to say who that is yet. But if you're one of the people who follow me and you hit the subscribe button here because you know my work on SI.com, I'm going to have Roman Reigns next week right before WrestleMania. He's in the big match. So we'll have a media guest next week. The media people don't have to freak out. It's the SI Media Podcast. We'll have a media guest. And we're going to also talk to Roman Reigns. So we'll have two interviews next week. But this week's a roundtable. Before we get to the roundtable, let me tell you about Mattress Firm. Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise. But know this, they are more than just mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, they have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening. mattressfirm.com/podcast. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast. to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. And with that, we go to the roundtable right here on the SI Media Podcast with Andrew Marchand and Chad Finn. All right, joining me now on this SI Media Podcast roundtable, Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. You've heard him here before, and guy who's nonstop breaking stories these days, Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. Guys, thanks for coming on. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, you bet, man.
All right. Oh, Andrew, since I did mention you're breaking stories left and right, you had two this week. You broke the story that Peyton Manning will not be going to Fox and that Dan Patrick is leaving Sunday Night Football. Let's start with Peyton. What the story is, Peyton is not going to Fox. Do we know what Fox will do for the Thursday night football game booth?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, plan B, you know, first they wanted to get an analyst. That was their goal, and Peyton was by far plan A. They were all in on trying to get Peyton because, you know, they just spent $3.3 billion for 5 years to get that Thursday package with the idea of making it even bigger, and they felt like Peyton Manning was the guy to do that. So that has been the plan. Now, from what I've been told, there's not a clear plan B. I do think it puts your boy Gus Johnson, giving him a better chance to be the play-by-play guy. I think if Peyton had come on, it would not have been Gus as the play-by-play guy. You know, as they wrote about Tirico, there were talks about trying to borrow Tirico. NBC wasn't having any of that. Tirico's probably out for Fox. Not probably is out for Fox, I would say. There's a chance he'll do the NFL Network games because there's 18 Thursday night games, 11 will be on Fox, right, and then the other 7 just on NFL Network. And then in terms of the analyst, they love Greg Olson, but I think he'll probably play. You know, I don't know. You know, he's going to make, I think, $6 or $7 million this year, and he's still kind of a Pro Bowl caliber player. They had Carson Palmer in for an audition, as well as Jason Witten, who also could play, Joe Thomas as well. So it's a little up in the air at the moment in terms of what they're going to do now post Peyton.
Chad, Peyton Manning, interesting coming from Boston. How do you, if he would have gotten one of those jobs, how do you think that would have went over with the Boston fans, him calling maybe a Tom Brady game? It would have been great TV, but I don't know. I didn't get the, I don't understand the networks, just the yearning for Peyton Manning. Well, what do you think about what Peyton could do in a booth?
Well, you know how Boston fans would react. They'd say Brady would do it better if he were in the booth, which isn't true, by the way. If you saw both of them on Saturday Night Live, you know, Manning's got a little bit more camera presence than Brady does.
I thought Brady was great on that SNL, though.
He was the diaper.
Yes,
that's all I remember.
Well, yeah, and they walking around. Well, they. I mean, listen. Can you imagine that sketch now? It does not get made, but they had Brady walking around an office in his underwear. It was like the hot guy in the office, and he was in his underwear. That would not get on television today.
It's probably a Me Too moment, right? I've been watching Cheers reruns lately with my 11-year-old, and I'd say Sammy would have been probably fired in the first episode. So a lot of things have changed going back or even recently. But the Manning appeal is obvious. He's one of the great stars in NFL history, and he's really good in his commercials. He's got a good sense of humor. So I think the easy connection for television executives to make is to say, wow, he's good in those 30, 60-second bits. We can have him on for 2.5, 3 hours as well, and he'll be just as good. I'm not sure that's the case. Everybody is kind of searching for their next Tony Romo. Romo, I thought, really struggled in the postseason this year to the point where his second season, I'm not sure. I'm curious to see how much better he is or where he's improved, because I think he hit a bit of a wall there and sort of revealed how difficult it is to sustain that over the course of a full season. I'm not sure any guy who's a recently retired player is going to come in there and be exactly what they want him to be, but it's that quest for to catch that buzz like Romo did last year.
I could not possibly agree more with you. I've said this, and I'd be curious if either of you guys have heard anything about this. Romo came out of the gate like gangbusters. Everyone loved him. People were watching games to hear Tony, and then I thought over the last, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks of the regular season, I felt like he got neutered, and I felt like some CBS executive told him, stop guessing the plays, and a lot of that went away over the last 6 weeks. I thought it was very noticeable. He was still enjoyable because it still felt like there was this. I think at one point I tweeted, you know, he was like a combination football idiot savant and like drunk guy at the end of the bar. It was a combination of that. But I really thought they neutered him over the last 6 weeks. My theory is that CBS neutered him. I don't think he woke up one day and decided to change. And I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that, Chad. Obviously, you noticed it. Do we know anything about why he changed a little bit towards the end of the season?
I haven't heard that about the neutering, but it makes a lot of sense. I thought he also sort of regressed in the area of he fell into like the Madden kind of thing where, you know, bing, bang, boom. And I think there was a questionable catch call, you know, standard catch, no catch that we're going to be dealing with even more this year. And he really just sort of went, you know, and I don't know. And it was really annoying. And it wasn't the kind of thing he was doing early in the season. He actually would have an opinion or try to point something out rather than just sort of sitting there dragging his feet. So maybe somebody told him not to be so opinionated or not to guess plays or guess what the call was going to be. And it kind of took away a little bit of his fastball. It's entirely possible.
I mean, most play-by-play guys want a clean call when they go in, you know, at the line of scrimmage. They don't really want to be talked over. So, you know, he was working with Jim Nantz. I'm not saying that Nantz said anything, but I do think that most play-by-play guys want to have a clean call, you know, when they're going there. They don't necessarily want a guy chiming in, you know, all the time in terms of what the play is going to be.
God forbid.
At the end of games, you know, at the end of plays too. And I mean, a good, and this is the right thing. You know, analysts sometimes will step on the toes of the play-by-play guy. You got to let him finish his call, take a beat, and then give your analysis. But so I think your ears are, you know, could have been attuned to something that perhaps was going on.
Yes. My ears don't fail me.
You have good ears. Best ears ever for any host of SI Media Podcast.
It was very noticeable. Andrew, anything on Peyton? I mean, do we know why Peyton sort of plays this dance now 2 years in a row about going in the booth and then he doesn't go in the booth?
I mean, from what I was told, he was considering it. You know, the Thursday package kind of worked into his schedule. I do think his kids are important, that he wants to be home if he could on the weekends. Monday Night Football wouldn't afford him that because you go in for Monday night, you know, during the weekend, you know, probably on Saturday most of the time. And so, you know, he kind of ruled Monday Night Football out. And then, you know, we all know his goal is to kind of be a John Elway and run a team. And so, you know, does this get him closer to his goal? And here's the other thing. I don't know Peyton. I think I may have been in a group interview with him once years and years ago when the Jets were playing the Patriots in my first go-round with the Post. But I don't know him. But I did talk to a lot of people, you know, during this process. And this is something, you know, I think fans probably know as well. But he's very particular. And so if everything wasn't totally lined up for him and it wasn't exactly right, you know, most people I talked to thought he wouldn't do it because that's just how the Manning family operates. You look at, you know, how Eli didn't go to San Diego as a big example. So a situation like this, and you know, as it went on, I talked to some people who were close to him, and I said to them, if I was talking to Peyton, I'd tell him don't do it, because to me, even, you know, especially as it dragged on, there were two soft deadlines that passed and there was no answer. It, to me, if you really aren't into it, it's a big commitment,
right?
And yes, it's a cushy job, but it's a commitment for these guys. So, you know, I think he probably made the right call for him. I know Fox is obviously very disappointed.
Right. Before we move on from Peyton, I might as well ask you, Chad, since you're there, could you ever envision any scenario at all in which Brady would go into the booth when his playing days are over?
No. he's going to be Tony Robbins. He may already be Tony Robbins. You know, the whole TB12 lifestyle brand, and he's got his book out over the past year, and his weird talk show appearances on Colbert and that sort of thing. He's transitioning into that next aspect of his life once he's done playing football. And I don't think it has anything to do with television. I don't think it'll have anything to do with working for a team, although, you know, sometimes guys get that front office bug after they're away from the game for a little while. But it seems to me it's all lifestyle and health and marketing himself as you know, he wouldn't use the word guru, but that's how we're going to look at it, as someone who can help people, you know, live a healthier lifestyle. That seems to be his thing, and it gets weird by the day up here with that. But
it's a very nice way of saying snake oil salesman.
Yeah, snake oil salesman. That's a good way of putting it. Or at least some people he's associated with have that reputation.
Yes. Make sure you drink, you know, 85,000 gallons of water, and your life will be just perfect. Let's go to college. Two things this week. We got the Final Four, and then ESPN's Get Up debuts. Let's start with Get Up. It's a bizarre name, I think, but I guess they unveiled their studios this week. Did either of you go to the new studios in New York City for the Mike Greenberg Get Up show?
I did not.
Okay. I know they had some media members there. So this show debuts April 2nd, which is...
Only ones they like, Jimmy.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess
I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. I'm just joking.
Listen.
As your foremost say, ESPN PR, I'm just joking. I like them all.
Does Mike Greenberg not like anyone? I don't... I find that hard to believe.
No. Mike and I, no, I think we're fine. Yeah. I mean, I was on a show when I was there a couple times, and before then I knew him. No, we're fine. I'm just joking.
All right, so the show debuts Monday. Expectations for the show, do you think, listen, I sort of think it's on ESPN, people will watch it because it's on ESPN. It's just a natural thing for sports fans to do. But Chad, what do you think ESPN expects from the show, and what do you think viewers, how do you think viewers will react to the show?
I'm stumped. I mean, I haven't seen the appeal of it all along. I like Greenberg. I liked the, for a while, I liked the stick with Golic, and it was certainly really valuable for ESPN is, if anything else, a way to market to other personalities and brands and get FaceTime for things that they want to get FaceTime to, people they want to get FaceTime to. But I look at him, and I know he's written a lot of books about other things and has branched into stuff beyond sports, but I look at him, and I don't know what a show hosted by Mike Greenberg is going to be, especially when you have a personality like Michelle Beadle, who's a very strong on-air personality, and then a basketball guy. Jalen Rose has always been a good studio analyst in my mind. He was really good with Bill Simmons back in the Grantland days when they were together. But I don't know what his role on a show like this is going to be. It feels like a mishmash of stuff. And I've just never seen Greenberg as a strong enough personality to host what they expect this to be, which is competitive with the Today Show and Good Morning America and that sort of thing. I'm really curious to see what shape it takes, or if it's around long enough to find what it ultimately is best at.
Andrew, Get Up. You looking forward to it?
I can't wait. I have a countdown clock in my house. when this airs, we're down to like 72 hours. I personally think, to me, the the most talented person of those three is Michelle Beadle. I think she is, proven on a lot of different forums that she's really good on TV. She kind of has the thing I think Charles Barkley has, very free and easy on TV. I don't know her. I know her a little bit off the air, but not really at all. Very couple of occasions, but she strikes me as she's the same off the air as she is on, which is usually a key, especially if you have a good personality. So to me, she's somebody who perhaps will get some people to, a TV. Greenberg, the money that they're paying him, that supposedly, reportedly, I think that was to Jim Miller, yep. Had that number when John Skipper was still in charge.
$14.5 million for the three of them. I don't know how you make a return on that investment. You know, I mean, you've got to sell a lot of ads for a lot of money.
Yeah, so I don't know, Greenberg, he's very smooth. But do I have a passion? I feel like to get people to watch now, it's a passion play. Like, say whatever you want about Stephen A or Max, they drive ratings in part because of their personalities that attract people. Greenberg's kind of a middle of the road kind of guy. Again, smooth on the air, but is there a big Mike Greenberg following out there? I mean, he did Mike and Mike for a long time. I'm not sure about that.
Right.
And Jalen, he seems fine, but again, he doesn't strike me as someone who, again, like a Barkley type, someone I have to watch. How you put that show together, they do have a very experienced, successful producer in Bill Wolf. That's very important as well. But ultimately, it's the people that you have in there, you know, that get it right, like they did, you know, with Kornheiser and Wilbon and that kind of chemistry.
It's interesting because you brought up the money that Jim Miller had, $14.5 million combined for the three hosts, Greenberg, Beetle, Jalen Rose. And it makes me think, my favorite, if I'm going to watch a sports show in the morning, I love the NFL Network's Good Morning Football. Full disclosure, I'm friends with Schrager. I love him. Kyle Brandt, I mean, I like him a lot. Kay Adams is the host, Nate Burleson. Combined, I bet they don't even make $1 million, the four of them. And that show has progressively gotten more popular, bigger ratings. You know, in this day and age, you got to get play on social, which it's done. And I think the show really got elevated this past NFL season. And it just shows you, if you know, you're authentic, real, have fun with it, don't take sports like it's, you know, brain surgery. I don't know if Greenberg, you know, those guys have that personality. I'm not sure if Greenberg does, but it's an interesting comparison because, like I said, those guys were relatively unknown. Schrager did sidelines for NFL, for Fox, but they put those four together and it's worked. I don't know what you guys think about that show, but to me, the Greenberg's like the opposite. Throw all the money out there, you have the name, but who knows what the personalities, and is it just going to be forced humor? It's going to be interesting to watch.
So what is his demographic? I think that's the big question, is who's he appealing to? Is it football fans? Is it people remember him with Golic? Is there some other target here? And, you know, I looked at him, and I don't think authenticity. I mean, that was shtick with Golic. He was the, you know, the one who was getting manicures or whatever, and Golic was the grubby old football guy, and that was how they made their name. But I don't think that's really a clear indication of what both of their personalities was. We found out in the end it was a lot more complicated than that when they were pissed off at each other for Greenberg leaving, and you could kind of, you'd watch it for the undertones that you could pick up at when they were splitting up in their final days. I look at this, and if I were putting this show together, it would be Beetle and Greenberg in the second seat, but this is Greenberg's baby, and I just don't know who it's designed to appeal to. I guess we have to watch it a couple times to kind of get that sense.
Chad, are you saying... I was just going to say, Chad, are you saying you didn't tune into the show because it was one skinny guy and one fat guy, and that's supposed to be funny?
Oh, that's what they were doing. I never quite got it.
All right, Andrew, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I think Mike Greenberg is a perfect example of what the whole issue for ESPN, you know, part of the issue for ESPN is, you know, what is it? Because you mentioned in the morning, you have a good show on NFL Network. You have MLB Network has their own show. You have podcasts. You have, you know, all kinds of radio shows. So people can find their passion. So if I like football, I can go find a football show that has personality. I like baseball, same thing. So if you're ESPN and you're sitting there like, we're going to be all things, all people, so what can I give you? You're not getting information from this show. You know, you're getting some information, just but nothing exclusive. You know, maybe Schefter breaks a story every once in a while that goes on that show. Right. But, like, nothing that you're tuning in because I'm going to get exclusive information or better analysis necessarily on that sport, because I can turn the channel and go to MLB and hear about baseball. So, to me, they're selling personality. And that's where you have to ask yourself. Like I said, to me, of the three, Beatles are a standout personality. The other two, to me, they don't necessarily do that. So it's how you structure the show to highlight that. And also the chemistry of, you know, the two. Because, you know, again, going back to Kornheiser and Wilbon, you know, I know your buddy Jim Miller did a whole thing about, you know, the origins of that show. But here's the thing. The first thing they got right, they got the two people right. And they could put pictures behind them and, a rundown on the side and all that thing. They had Kornheiser and Wilbon with great chemistry, yelling at each other and knew each other really well. And that's why, ultimately, that show worked. And the other stuff was good, don't get me wrong, but it was because of the two personalities that they put together.
It's basically, the three of us are not enthused about the debut, but we plugged it. April 2nd, ESPN 7 a.m. At least let's plug it and be fair to the show. All right, let's go to the tournament. Final four this weekend, title game Monday. Besides the crazy upsets, the two biggest stories of the tournament are Sister Jean and CBS showing crying fans. Let's start with the crying fans, because I know, Andrew, you did a thing on this. I did it. I wrote about it as well. CBS, I thought, I give them credit from this standpoint. In this day and age of political correctness, you would have thought if you called CBS and said, you know, what's the deal with showing the crying kids? They would have said, oh, we apologize, blah, blah. They doubled down and they're like, we're showing the crying kids. We don't like it. And if you don't like it, too bad. We don't give a shit. So what were, but you were very anti the crying kids. Were you shocked that CBS said, too bad, we're going to do it?
Well, number one is they didn't do it, though. I mean, the following weekend, there was no crying kids this past, you know, during the Sweet 16. And, you know, I think the producers and directors were likely told, you know, not to focus on that. Now, if it happens, it happens. And that was actually a point that I was fine with personally. You know, if a kid shows up on who's crying, you know, for a second, sure. But the fact that they kept going back and back. And, yeah, was I surprised? I talked to Harold Bryan, who's their executive producer. And, yeah, I mean, you know, my thing is I'm always going to try to make a call to give people a chance to tell their side of, you know, what you're saying, especially when you're being critical. I think it's only fair. I think that's one of the things that the internet sometimes doesn't do. And also media columnists, you know, over time sometimes haven't done, because, you know, all these people are people. So, you know, I thought Harold might answer differently, but, you know, I agree that you got to give him a little bit of credit for just saying, you know, we like how we're doing it. The problem is, to me, is that there's just no reason to show it, especially when they kept going back to the same kid. I don't know. That felt uncomfortable to me, and it's not the biggest thing in the world. You know, with social media, you get people saying snowflake, all this other stuff. Nobody's saying that. You know, but the bottom line is it's just unneeded, and it really didn't tell a story. When a team loses, we kind of know they're going to be upset. You can show the players. You don't have to show, you know, 8-year-olds crying.
Yeah, I mean, what I wrote is, you know, it's not about showing the kid. I mean, you show the kid, and then 50 million people on Twitter rip the video, and then the video goes viral, and then the kid's all over the internet. And if he's, you know,
exactly
in that age group where he can go to school one day and his friends are making fun of him for crying on national TV, it's like, why are you doing that to a kid? Chad, any pro or con crying kids on TV for the tournament?
Yeah, I'm with Andrew. It's okay to me. It's actually kind of amusing when they, you know, when it's one of the college kids, like somebody in the band. Or
right. College kids to me are fair game. Yeah.
Me too. Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's beneficial, you know, they get a little instant fame or a notoriety out of it for a while. The girl was playing the flute or whatever the hell it was a few years ago. But, you know, that's different. And if you're going to show it once, okay, show the kid crying once. I guess I'm all right with that. But they retrace their steps and kept going back there. And you get to the point where it's enough already. Come on, this is maybe it's because I'm a parent, but you sympathize with the kid. You even if I don't care about the outcome in the game, you're going to feel bad for, you know, some little 8-year-old bawling his eyes out. I don't want to keep seeing it over and over again. But I feel like that's something they sort of learned from the way Fox covers various sports. And I wish they would get away from it, but it seems to be getting them a lot of attention, so I doubt they will.
And the other angle of the tournament, I'll throw this question out, and if one of you or both of you would like to tackle it, that's fine. If you want to just run the other way, you can do that. I'll just throw it out there. Can there be such a thing as too much Sister Jean?
Andrew?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say yeah.
Good. All right.
Sister Sunday?
Go ahead, Andrew. The floor is yours.
I mean, I think there could be too much. I'm not saying there is too much. I'm saying there could be. Look, I think it's a good story. I think would agree. It's a good story. Does it get beaten over your head maybe too much for some people's liking? It doesn't bother me necessarily. You know, I'm focused on the game. But I could see it annoying some people, especially if you're rooting for the other team. I could see it being a little bit annoying. But she is 98. I mean, I don't know. It's a pretty good story, I think. She has a nice personality. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure CBS is ready to give Sister Jean her own NCIS franchise. I mean,
too young for CBS.
Oh,
that's probably accurate, but. Sister Jean has become the face of the tournament, and TBS, Turner, CBS, they can't get enough, it seems like. Just throwing that out there. Probably shouldn't say another word.
This is a tried and true thing for the NCAA tournament. Go back to, like, Villanova winning, and I can't remember what the guy's role was, but he was he was sort of the same sort of thing, and you got to know him throughout the course of the tournament, right up and through the upset at Georgetown. So they always look for those human interest stories, and yeah. if it's an older person who's attached to one team or another, they're certainly going to emphasize that as much as they can. But she is pretty remarkable. I mean, she doesn't look a day over 80, I understand why they're going through it like they are. It's certainly brought them attention.
I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to, and you know what's going to happen. If or when Loyola loses in the Final Four or in the title game, some media member, I don't know who it's going to be, but someone's going to go out there and throw out some outlandish, tweet about, good riddance, Sister Jean. And then they're going to have to issue, the apology. it's coming. It's coming.
But didn't that guy, some talk show host in Tennessee, didn't he do that? He swore at her or something.
Oh, really? Yeah. There's going to be more. My producer, Lou Pellegrino, is dying to weigh in here. I don't think he loves all of the Sister Jean coverage, so I'm going to let him say something.
It's annoying, and I actually have had this melody in my head for a while that if they do lose, I will be rewriting the words to Candle in the Wind by Elton John. So it will not be Goodbye Norma Jean, it'll be Goodbye Sister Jean, and I'm going to continue to write this song. And I will perform it, I will sing it on this podcast. Even if they win. Actually, if they win. If they lose, I want them to lose. So if they win the entire thing, I'll sing this song for you.
I think I'd rather you sing if they lose. And okay. So you'll be more into it.
I think you can sing it either way.
All right, I'll sing it either way.
Good point, Andrew. Now, let me be clear. That was not said by Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. That was not said by Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. That was not said by Jimmy Train of SportsIllustrated.com. That was said by Lou Pellegrino. Send him the tweets. Send him the, if you're going to call someone and say, I can't believe Jimmy said that. Lou Pellegrino said that.
Twitter handle. But that's
what's the Twitter handle?
I'm not saying.
Okay, I'll give it out later.
It's not that hard to find. It's my name. It's either at Lou underscore Pellegrino.
There it is. Make sure you get the underscore when you send the hate tweet. Lou underscore Pellegrino.
I just think that sometimes they take it away from the kids a little too much. I mean, look, I haven't been watching all of Loyola's games, and I think it's a fascinating story, but somebody out there, when they lose, if they lose, the crying Jordan meme on Sister Jean's body, there, please.
Again, not Andrew Marchand, not Chad Finn, not Jimmy Trina. That's Lou Pellegrino.
Underscore Pellegrino. Yes. Underscore Pellegrino. There's going to be some guy in Kansas who has the same name who's getting all these tweets out of him.
That's always funny, too. All right, let's move on because I need a producer for this podcast. I can't, after 2 weeks, lose a producer. So we're going to move on from that. Baseball starts as well. A-Rod in the booth for ESPN, and I'm amazed. Now, listen, I'm biased because as a Yankee fan, I don't like A-Rod. I know he won a World Series in 2009, but I don't love all the other things he did over the years. But here's what's interesting. I'm shocked at how many people think A-Rod as an analyst for the Sunday night game is a slam dunk based on him doing studio for Fox. It's a completely different job. Andrew, I'll go to you first since you're here in New York where A-Rod did his damage. Do you think it's an automatic? A-Rod's good doing the Sunday night game for ESPN?
No, it's the exact opposite. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be good or bad. I'm a big fan of, letting people and give them an opportunity before you decide how they're going to do. But totally different. Fox's pregame, it's, there's rehearsals. You know what's coming. You know the questions. To be a good game analyst, you got to have the game flow. The ESPN Sunday night is a more produced show than your average daily game in terms of, they try to get a lot of things in there. And so there is some chances to plan some things. But to really be good, to really excel, what Romo had, even though you soured on him a little bit, but the thing he brought is you really felt like Romo would be watching the game saying similar things if he was next to you on your couch at home and, in his living room. And so with A-Rod, he would definitely be watching the game. The guy loves baseball, constantly, watches it. And I used to say, I covered him, that, he was almost like a normal human being when you talked to him about baseball. the issue is, though, 100 hours of TV off the cuff, that's a lot of hours for A-Rod to get right. I'm not saying he's going to, be awful or do terrible things. I just think that's a lot of hours. That's what I'm going to say, over 100 hours. And also, I just don't know. I did a big story about it. I know why he's doing it. I just don't think it makes sense. I think he has everything going in his direction. I don't think this helps him at all. I think he does have some goals, some bigger goals in terms of, you know, making things right with everybody, and maybe even in broadcasting. But I think that he was kind of already the voice of baseball doing that Fox stuff. And I also don't know if he realizes that, you know, when Sunday Night Baseball is on, there's hundreds of thousands of people, low hundreds of thousands of people watching, not 30 million like there were after the Cubs won the World Series in that post game. So it's a different audience. And I think he'll be able to miss a couple possibly of Sunday nights, but it's basically every week. You know, J-Lo wants to go to the French Riviera, and he's like, you know, I got Milwaukee, St. Louis this weekend. I don't know. For me, I think I'd be on the jet to France.
Just leave the booth right in the middle of the game. Leave Matt Viskersian there by himself and take off on J-Lo's jet. That would be something A-Rod would do, I think. Chad, A-Rod, thoughts on his new gig?
Yeah, I think he's going to be an over-explainer. Yeah, he was good in the studio because there's a time limit, and he got a little window to show you how much he knew about this or that. And he was really informative on the nuances of baseball, the details, why this runner got picked off in this situation. And he's articulate, all those things you want, but it's like with Manning or any great athlete that you put in the studio, that's a lot of time to fill. And I there's going to be a lot of weight on Viskersian to rein him in and also to work Jessica Mendoza in. Dan Shulman, among all the good things he did as a play-by-play guy, he really balanced the talking time between the two analysts and the three-man booth almost extraordinarily well. I had to watch a few years ago, I had to watch a bunch of Sunday Night Baseball broadcasts in a row because it was in Bobby Valentine, that's hired as a manager here. And I went back and looked at stuff he had said about Red Sox players, and the one thing I really took away was how good Shulman was at getting something out of Bobby V and then going to, I think it was Schilling, he was Schilling or Kruk at the time, and getting something worthwhile out of them, all the while calling the play-by-play of the game. And I know Viskersian's pretty good, but he's got a big order here working in a relative novice like A-Rod, who really is going to want to talk, and then also letting Jess Mendoza get her airtime as well. I'm curious how the chemistry is going to work right away, because I think it's going to be a work in progress.
Yeah, and I know A-Rod wanted Viskersian, but I also know from his Fox days, A-Rod loved Kevin Burkhardt, loved working with Burkhardt.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Yeah, exactly. I think everyone's a fan of Kevin Burkhardt's, but I think he was a big help for A-Rod, so it'll be interesting, too, to see him now away from Burkhardt. I think he credits Burkhardt a lot, too, for helping him through his gig there at Fox. Let's go to Bleacher Report. They are coming out with a streaming app, and I think this is brilliant, where you can, during an NBA game, let's say the Warriors are playing a big game against the Rockets, or LeBron's having a game where he's going nuts, which seems to happen all the time, you as an NBA fan can then purchase that game during the game for 99 cents. I think it's one of the most brilliant ideas I've ever heard. I think it's something the NFL needs to look into. I know they have that deal with DirecTV and Red Zone, but it's amazing how far this is what I said on Twitter. The NBA seems so far ahead of the curve than any other sport on this stuff. Baseball as well. I mean, you know, the Yankees and Red Sox are in a pennant race, and it's September. As a Yankee fan, I'd pay 99 cents to watch a Red Sox game one night. You know, if the Yankees are one up or something like that, let's see how the Red Sox are doing. Do you think, I mean, listen, this is obviously the way it's going, but do you think other sports will jump on this bandwagon, or is it just that the NBA is so ahead of the game that the other sports are going to be left in the dark on something like this?
Well, first off, Jimmy, like, I think it's a good idea, but I want to hear all the other ideas you've ever heard, if you think this is one of the most brilliant ideas you've ever heard.
I'm saying in the terms of sports, like giving, listen, nothing's going to top Sunday Ticket. Like, Sunday Ticket, right. Like, it's not, I'm not putting it on the level of...
Okay, I mean, there's a lot of things they've invented. iPhone. All right, anyway. They have your,
in terms of sports coverage for fans.
It's unbelievable. It's like the party of the Red Sea. No, yeah. I think it is a good idea, of course. I mean, and it is where everything's going. I think, it's really going to affect more, you're right, like Steph Curry late night out west, games on the local cable affiliate in San Francisco, and you're at home and Steph Curry has 60 and you can put down 99 cents and watch the last quarter. But yeah, it makes sense. And that's where it's going. That's where consumption is going. That's where you hear about stuff. I know you guys both are on Twitter a lot. I mean, you hear about something, then you can go right to it. It makes sense, you know, what they're trying to do with their app. You know, they want to be basically the hub for all sports. You know, I'm interested to see. I know that they, yeah, the sports that they don't own, they want to be able to, in their Bleacher Report Live, be able to send you to the ESPN app. It's going to be interesting to see if ESPN allows them to do that. It makes sense in some regards, but in other regards, you're kind of letting Bleacher Report be the, you know, home and the hub, if that works out, unless right. everyone does it. Maybe ESPN will do the same thing. But to answer your question, yeah, it's a good idea. I mean, it's where it's what the, all these companies have to do. But right now, it's the side business. Over the next 10 years, this will be probably become the main business for most of these companies, 10, 15 years.
Baseball is the sport that needs to do this more than any other sport, in my opinion. Chad, do you agree with me that this is one of the most revolutionary ideas in the history of mankind?
Yeah, John, and all of that, which is number one in mankind history.
Now, Sunday Ticket is the greatest invention of all time.
Oh, I'll go with that. I'll go with Sunday Ticket.
That's up there.
I mean, maybe it's because I'm old now, but I feel like, especially like I have coworkers, they don't remember the days when on a Sunday afternoon in New York, you got a game on CBS, a game on Fox, and that was it.
But now it's almost watered down, though, because there's so many games that are on Monday, Thursday, Sunday night that Sunday Ticket's barely worth it.
And they raise the price every year, but that's okay. Chad, I'm sorry. Go ahead on the Bleacher Report NBA 99 cents. It's a good thing, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, sure. It seems to hit all the things you'd want as a sports fan and a consumer. It's cheap. You can jump in on something late that you might have missed early. You know, social media is going to drive this a lot. Where
absolutely,
like I remember with the women's gold medal hockey game during the Olympics, where I don't know who was watching it at the beginning. Probably a lot of fans who were into the Olympics and into that particular rivalry, but it was the thing everybody's talking about on social media at 1:32 a.m. as the game became a classic. And you have those nights, like in a West Coast game where Curry, or I guess it won't be Curry for a while, but you know, James Harden or somebody dropped has 40 points through three quarters. Certainly there's appeal to jumping on the app and watching that fourth quarter for a really reasonable price. I'm curious to see what you know, how they do financially with this right out of the gate, whether
right.
it's a big success or you know they have a tough time you know getting people to drop a dollar to watch a fourth quarter of a game. But it's certainly something that serves fans well, and the NBA does that better than any of the other sports leagues, is figuring out what is going to appeal to its fans and then finding a way through its broadcast partners to make things happen.
Yeah, I'd love to see baseball do this. I think it would be perfect for them. I got to say, 5 minutes here for Andrew and I to discuss the Mike and the Mad Dog reunion on the MLB Network. And I have a bunch of topics written down. I was going to ask you guys your thoughts on Brent Musburger's tweet about Stormy Daniels on Sunday. But we'll skip that. If anyone hasn't seen it, just check out Brent's Twitter account. He had some advice for the president and wearing
gents. And is that what he called us?
No, lads is the name. Is
lads. Right. Yeah,
yes. Lads. Nothing like a tweet with lads, the president, condoms, all in one tweet. By Brent Musburger, of all people.
You are looking live.
In the world.
Yes, you are looking live at the president's bedroom. let's go to, and I was going to ask about Jimmy Pitaro.
There is no Trojan in that bedroom.
Good Lord.
I was going to ask about Jimmy Pitaro's interview in Variety, but there wasn't a ton there that I think was interesting. The only other interesting thing I think that came out over the past week was the SportsCenter 6 ratings without Jemele Hill and Michael Smith came out, and they were lower than what they were with Jemele Hill. Let me slow down. The ratings came out. They were lower without Jemele Hill and Michael Smith, who everyone on Twitter hates, apparently. So is it just that there's erosion from SportsCenter, they'll never get high ratings? Or is there something about maybe Jemele and Michael were not as unpopular as the Twitter mob would have you believe? Well, Chad, you could take that one if you would like.
Definitely the latter. I think we all probably suspected that, too, that it's more a SportsCenter issue and what they are nowadays, and with everybody obviously getting their highlights in other ways and not having to tune in to SportsCenter like you did in 1992 to see the score of the Mariners-Angels game or any of those things, which you've actually really had to do. You saw highlights and got scores you didn't know. I know young people find that hard to believe nowadays, but they're still trying to sort out what they're going to be, and the personality-driven shows have had some success and some failures, but I think it's clear that really no matter what they do, they're still going to be dealing with loss of viewership because of technology and because people have found other ways to watch television. And so, the Michael and Jamel thing was a convenient political argument for a lot of people who didn't like what they stood for, but ultimately it's really an issue with SportsCenter trying to figure out what it is these days rather than the people they're putting out there to face the camera.
Andrew, SportsCenter 6.
The show just didn't work. They tried to, I put it like a football analogy. They tried to put in a new offense. It wasn't successful. Ultimately, that show is going to be graded on the ratings, and if the ratings are there, they're going to, it would have continued no matter what. Then they changed the offense, and Jamel, asked off of the show. They were going to tell her to leave anyway. And Michael, maybe could have stayed possibly. But the bottom line is when you look at, what SportsCenter has to do, it's kind of what I said about Greenberg earlier. They have to figure out. They did it with Van Pelt, and it's been very successful. You need that personality that is going to cut through, and it's to be more than just, where can I get my scores and highlights? Because like Chad said, it's not 1987 anymore. Everyone can find that out before they have to wait for SportsCenter. They have a franchise that they've made a lot of money on over a long period of time, and they can sell that to advertisers. But, the show was ill-conceived. I never, I don't really think I ever really worked with Jamel when I was there, but I didn't follow her on Twitter. Now I do. I will say that her Twitter, she does go into politics a lot. So, you're going to get a lot of pushback. I'm not saying, she's right, wrong, or indifferent, but she does, go into a lot of things that are going to get the Twitter mob all heated. I do think people pay way too much attention to Twitter mobs, in my opinion. Only 17% of people are on Twitter,
right,
and most of them are journalists, it seems to me. And secondly, I don't think it necessarily is what everyone thinks. I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't pay attention to Twitter. You should, in some regards, but I think it's a little overrated. And, with Jamel also, there's a social media policy, that that everyone who works there gets told. And so, she, from what I'm told, makes a very nice salary. And so if you choose to be political, when they ask you not to be, you better produce big ratings on your shows, if you want to continue to do them the way you're doing them.
I'm grateful every single day that Sports Illustrated does not have a social media policy. Does the Post have a social media policy? Andrew?
They do. They
do. They do.
Quite honestly, I don't know, maybe a little retroact. I never read the excuse. I just knew, I don't want to jinx myself. I could do something stupid. Don't get me wrong. I totally could. But here's my rule. If I have to think about something twice, don't tweet it. If you're like, should I tweet this? Probably not. Only time I actually ever got in trouble is because your boy Deitch, during the 60 Minutes interview with, what's his name, John Roberts, he was interviewing Anthony Bosch, who was the drug dealer in the
A-Rod.
The A-Rod thing.
Yeah.
And I it was the most ridiculous interview. He was he asked Roberts asked the drug dealer, did you think about the children? when he was dealing drugs to A-Rod. That's an actual question.
That's a ridiculous
question.
So I was
just sort of having fun with that on Twitter. And I tried to tweet it out, and I got a little DM from one of my bosses, easy. So.
But wait, but what did you say that rubbed your bosses the wrong way?
Well, I think Deitch tweeting it out didn't help me, because, a lot of media people follow media columnists.
Right, but
so.
But did you?
I kind of was just like.
What was your tweet?
Just making fun of how terrible the interview was. It was they were asking Anthony Bosch, they were asking him. I think it was John Roberts. I might have the name wrong.
So you're a media.
Whoever did that 60 Minutes.
So you cover media.
Scott, excuse me. I apologize to John Right. It was Scott Pelley who did the interview. Scott Pelley.
But what I'm trying to get
it
to
was ridiculously, and now I can say it because I don't work there. It was the most. Go back and look. It is hilariously awful.
Oh, you mean you got in trouble with ESPN?
Yeah, I'm thinking
the Post. Okay, I'm like, yeah, the Post.
I didn't get in trouble. I got a little, like,
I'm saying the Post.
Being like,
yeah.
Careful.
I'm saying the Post curse words and naked people on the cover of their paper, and they're worried about you tweeting about it.
Okay. No, they're fine. They're fine. Well, I mean, I've only been there 2 months yet, so let me, who knows. But the bottom line is, no, it was more, I was at ESPN.
I got you. Yes.
And then Deitch tweeted out that I was making fun of it. I was having my fun. But then he had a tweet out that I was doing it, and then he like pulled on me.
I got you. Well, I like that move by Deitch. I'm not gonna lie. No, I'm like, but I will say, I mean, oh God, that's just a ridiculous. Like I said, Sports Illustrated doesn't have a Twitter policy. It's the greatest thing ever. All right, Andrew, we got to get to Mike and the Mad Dog. They reunited on the MLB Network today, on Wednesday. This comes out on Thursday. Chad, if you don't want to stay for this, I don't want to put you through the agony. It's totally up to you. We're gonna.
No, I gotta hear this.
Okay. Most ridiculous moment, was it Mike and Chris taking credit for John Sterling's popularity, or Dog saying it was ridiculous that The Shape of the Water won the Oscar, and Mike said the only Oscar hosts who have ever been good are Bob Hope and Johnny Carson?
Here's the thing. I mean, it's unbeatable. That's why, you know, it was always unbeatable, because you pick your poison, and it's sincere. I mean, I do think... And, you know, Mike said it about Chris, about Sterling. In Mike's mind, you know, they still act as if, like, they brought Piazza to the Mets. I mean, right. This is, you know, that's like, it's not true. But, you know, he said it enough that there's a legion of fans who believe it. Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I did tweet about the, you know, the Sterling thing. And it's not that, and here's the thing,
but can I just say,
Twitter people, go ahead.
Can I say one thing, though?
Go ahead, Jimmy.
They were right in terms of this. They were the first show that ever played the Sterling clip, because I'm a diehard Yankee fan, diehard Mike and the Mad Dog fan. Every single day they started playing those clips, and then every other show at FAN copied them, and then Mike and the Mad Dog stopped playing the clips, and it made me irate because I didn't listen to the other shows. I only listened to Mike and the Mad Dog, and then I couldn't hear the clips. Now, listen.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing, though, that the people like on Twitter kind of missed and whatever. You know, I can't like go back, you know, 100 times each person. Is that he said that he was the reason for it. No, Sterling's the reason
because he
had these crazy calls.
Of course.
Again, I'm mincing words. It's really not that big a deal. But like, Sterling was the reason for it. Yes, of course it helped. They had the most popular radio show in the city, and they were replaying it, so it made it bigger. But if if John wasn't going burn, baby, burn, and, you know, every other, you know, crazy call he had, the Giambino, et cetera, El Capitan, then there's nothing to, there's no story there. It's just funny. I mean, the kind of the arrogance of the whole thing.
Yes. Well, that's why we love them. I mean, the other thing too is, I think if Sigmund Freud was alive, he could have a field day with Mike Francesa, because Mike is so, I don't want to use the word miserable. He's just, you know, grumpy, unhappy, and flat when he's by himself, especially. And then he gets with Russo, and he is a completely different person, and it is the greatest duo you can imagine. It's unbelievable. Even, like, I know he's done podcasts with Bill Simmons. I don't think they're, you know, I don't think they really have chemistry. But it's like Mike and Chris, no matter where it is, when it is, it doesn't matter. You throw them together, and it's amazing how good they still are together.
Why is that? Why does it happen that way?
I don't think there. There's an answer. I think that's what chemistry is. I think that's the answer.
Well, I do, but I also think, though, if you look at how that show was put together, which is easy to say 3 decades later, or, you know, less than 3 decades later, but you have Mike, who at one point was really in tune and informative about everything, and then, you know, has faked it for about 10 or 15 years. But at one point, after he'd left CBS, was, you know, very plugged in, and had a good feel for things. And still, you know, in his latter years there, you know, had some things to say, but really was kind of faking it a lot. But when he was with Russo, you had that. And then you had the zany, this is who he is guy. I mean, like, if you can't tell me, you can't watch, was it Daredevil? When it's Mike and Chris, and Chris asked if the blind superhero, and Chris said, true story.
Right.
I mean, that you can't. You cannot beat that. That's unbeatable. That's too
right.
funny and too good. And the other thing about Chris, let me say this.
Wait, I let you talk about Chris, but let me just say one thing. Because that true story gets picked up all over the place. But to me, the Peter King one is a million times better. Where, if you're not familiar with it, it was at the height of the Michael Vick killing the dogs or owning the dog ring situation with Vick and the dogs. And Mike's breaking down the story, and Mike goes, and Dog, I'm telling you, he's already in trouble with Peter. And Dog goes, Peter King?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, to me, that's better than Daredevil True Story, but those are the two legendary stories. All right, go ahead, Andrew. What were you going to say about Dog?
Well, I was going to say, but the thing is, so I'm kind of kidding about Chris a little bit, but one thing that you also have to understand about Chris is he really, really knows how to do a show.
He really does, yeah.
He really knows how to do a show, and it's a skill. Not that many people have it. Colin Coward's excellent at doing the show. Craig Carton with Boomer was really excellent at running a show. And, you know, there are other people who are good at it, but to be really, really exceptional, Chris knows how to do that. Even when he brought him on, you know, on MLB on Wednesday, during high heat, he said, "Where have you been?"
Right.
Which, you know, was like a little kind of dig at Francesa, but does it with like a smile. It's funny for the audience, you know, and so it's good. And he has that skill, which is definitely a skill. Now, he also has the skill of saying, "I don't know anything about this issue," pause, and then gives a humongous opinion about it.
Right.
I mean, that's the other thing. It's ridiculous.
That's phenomenal. I don't want to be a rude host, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not going to lie to you. I'll give you the truth straightforward, and I want you guys on many, many times down the road. My plan was to do roundtable with you guys next week and Russo this week, and I couldn't make it work with it. We were going to do it Tuesday, and then he couldn't do it Tuesday. We were going to do it Monday. So I'm hoping to get Russo on, and the guy is just – I think he benefits from not – because he has a Twitter account, but he doesn't do it. His producers do it, and I think maybe his son does it. And I think that's a guy who benefits from not being on social media because when he does his shows, he's not catering to that crowd. He's sitting there today saying, I can't believe The Shape of the Water won the Oscar. It was garbage. Now, if you're on social media, like you might be afraid to say that. You might actually know the real title of the movie. But because he's not, he just lets it fly. And it's just a beautiful thing sometimes.
And that's also another, this is for another time. But I think there's, for some of these people, I don't think social media really benefits them that much.
Right, absolutely.
You might be right about Russo. Play-by-play guys as well. I don't really see the benefit really for those guys.
I don't think it benefits anyone. All right.
It benefits you, Jimmy Trainor. We all want to hear your thoughts.
Oh, I'm sure. Last question. Sunday is April 1st. That is when Mike can stop saying, I'm not allowed to talk about what I'm going to do in my future. I'm under contract. That is over April 1st. Andrew Marchand, what do we know about what Mike Francesa is going to do?
Well, first off, you should go to NewYorkPost.com and Google my name, or if that doesn't make sense. But Google my name and read my story about Francesa. I wrote about it a couple weeks ago. And I had a very interesting conversation where Mike said, you don't know anything I'm doing. He hired CAA, or he's working with CAA. I don't know if he's officially signed anything. That tells you that Mike, you know, has come into this a little bit and has been maybe not surprised, might not be the right word, but he's figured out that he needs a little help because for the previous decade, he didn't have an agent.
Right.
So, yes, CAA, very high-powered.
Not to interrupt, but another thing to add to the mystical nature of Mike Francesa, he did all his own contracts with FAN and Yes over the years. I don't think people knew that he never had an agent. He negotiated those contracts.
So he did have an agent for years, but then he let him go and he...
Years ago.
About 10 years ago. So,
okay.
So, yes. So now he has somebody. Now with CAA, he could do a lot of different things. He could try to, you know, make his own little company, sort of like Bill Simmons, and maybe do some sort of audio. They have a lot of ways that they can do that with CAA. I think that's possible. I do think he wants to do some audio work. I do think he would like to do some appearances. I know one person he's spoken to who he told that you know, that's part of what
can you tell us? Can you tell us who that is?
No, I cannot.
Oh, okay. I got to try.
Yeah, that was a good one. I cannot tell you, but, you know, might talk to this person. And, you know, I think he could do one-offs maybe with Russo in some form. You know, the big elephant in the room, if you will, is could he go back to WFAN? You know, Mike has had a very unique personality, especially in recent years after Chris left. That things, you know, in that office were a little bit strained. However, I do think I wouldn't, you know, Mark Chernoff is a long time, really almost a legendary program director when you look at his accomplishments over the years. He cares a lot about, you know, the ratings, and that show in the afternoon hasn't done great so far. And we're not even one book in, so give him a chance. Although I do think they may struggle with baseball. I do think, you know, that's not out of the total realm of possibility down the road. So, but you ask me what he's doing April 1st. I got to be honest with you. I don't know for sure what he's doing, but I do think those tea leaves I just kind of laid out with something with CAA, with some audio, and maybe something smaller, you know, one-off. But it's, you know, I talked to a lot of people about it when I did that story. It's not clear, and talking to Mike, although, you know, as he was denying everything, that half of the stuff was, you know, was already proven to be correct. Right. The other half still we'll see. I don't know if he knows exactly what he's doing. And I'm not sure April 1 you're going to know what he's doing. It's possible. But I'm not positive that's when he'll have a full plan ready to go.
I feel like, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like, I think, listen, there's Mike diehards. They'll go wherever he goes. And then I think there's a camp like me. It's like, just give me some announcement about you're doing something with Dog and that's what I want to hear. But we'll wait and see. I think that's coming soon. So, all right, I said we'd go a half hour. We went an hour. I apologize, but I enjoyed this. Hopefully you guys did too, and you will be back. I thank you for coming on. Was this, how did this roundtable go for you guys, as roundtables go?
It was good. I mean, you know, you said half an hour. I think people probably, you know, nobody's actually listening now. So, you know, after
the Mike and the Mad Dog fans are listening, trust me.
They'll listen throughout, all right. Yeah. But no, it went well. Thank you for having me on.
Right. Chad, I appreciate it. And like I said, definitely want to have you guys back for more roundtables.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Take care.
Take care, guys.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. My thanks to Andrew Marchand of the New York Post and Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Enjoyed that roundtable thoroughly. Hopefully you did as well. That wraps up this edition of the SI Media Podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and we will see you next Thursday. Take care.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.